You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahiahi marie, tēnā koutou katoa, ko mea toku ingoa.
Ko sauf toku ingoa, no mai haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki. Kia ora mea, how are you this week?
Kia ora sauf, I'm good, I'm a bit sleepy.
Yeah, I'm feeling that. Well,
and we both accidentally matched in our warm cosy greys.
No, we're accidentally twinning today. I love when we do that though.
We do it quite often, I
feel. We're just like... Our brains are slowly merging together.
I know, we're so in like, not DJ, radio flow state.
Radio, sure, obviously.
I don't know. Yes.
Yeah, we'll take it. What have we got on the show today, though?
Yeah, I caught up with artist Anne Shelton about her current exhibition on at Two Rooms Gallery, I Am an Old Phenomenon. So what have you got today?
I caught up with artist Joe Sheehan about his current exhibition on at Tim Melville Gallery, Line Drawing.
Ofakara, would love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So tuku patsahi mai. You can text us on 5395 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5 5
Also, after the show, koa e ware ware e ahe ana koutou, te whakarongo ki e nei kōrero anō hei pakihere roki roki maronga I te pai tuku tuku o Irirangi Poho, me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
What's it all for?
Various artists.
Anne Shelton is an interdisciplinary artist primarily working amongst an expanded photography practice in which she explores plant knowledge and impacts of plants have in relation to the human body, navigating the intersection of botanical histories and human plant knowledge systems. In her current exhibition on At Two Rooms, I Am an Old Phenomenon, Shelton presents a body of photographic works that continues in her exploration of plant knowledge, showcasing a series of large-scale archival pigment prints that capture plants at this pivotal point of motion and reaction. We see plant materials submerged, alight, rotting, afloat, caught in this act of response, enriched in liveliness, pivoting these typical notions of a still life and immersing these plant materials in their innate, unbound nature, resisting forms of fixed classification. Together, each image pulls you into an immersive encounter that brings you into the shifting threshold of botanical histories and human knowledge systems. I caught up with Anne about the show and her overall practice.
Morena, my name's Anne Shelton and I'm an artist. I've been working for quite some time in Aotearoa, and I guess photography is the linchpin around which my work circulates, you know, explorations of the medium of photography. And I've pursued those explorations in various ways with a lot of printed matter that I've made over the course of my career, so artist books, books, posters, which kind of continue to be an enduring part of my work, but also more recently in the last decade, performance, which is another way for me to explore the limits, I guess, of photographs and to just sort of push them around a bit and see how I can expand my practice in relation to the photographic.
Beautiful. And your current exhibition on At Two Rooms, I Am an Old Phenomenon, presents a series of photographic works that continue in your exploration of plant knowledge and the impacts plants have in relation to the body. I wanted to start off this conversation by speaking a bit to the project's initial points of momentum. Can you tell me a little bit about how this project started to come together? Was there a specific inquiry you were interested in exploring within this particular body of work?
Yes, most definitely. So I guess my work has always looked at edges and kind of narratives and explorations and kind of investigations of edges. And I had been working on a series of photographs which looked at plants in relation to the reproductive body. So I'd been exploring, I'd actually read a couple of books by Margaret Sparrow, Dame Margaret Sparrow, who started family planning, the Family Planning Clinic in Aotearoa. And she had referred to, at various points in the book, plants. And I started thinking, well, okay, there must be more of these plants, you know, plants that could help with abortion or with easing birth, etc. She'd written a couple of books about the history of abortion in Aotearoa.
Mm.
And I started thinking about those plants, and I made a series of work which looked at those kinds of plants, plants that could be used to ease a birth or end pregnancy, etc., all over the world. And as I researched that body of work, the figure of the witch kept coming up again and again. And the witch is, of course, the linchpin, to use that term again, that around which all that kind of knowledge circulated. And, of course, that brought the witch or the wise woman into conflict with capitalism and with religion. So I decided that would be my next body of work. I wanted to make a body of work which looked at her toolkit, looked at her lexicon of plants, looked at her body of knowledge that she kept and used to keep her community safe and healthy. And that's where I'm an Old Phenomenon came from. So series is an ongoing series, and I'm making a kind of ongoing compendium of plants. And as I go, I research each one, and some of the works that I make have a direct response embodied in them to the use of the plant, and some of them are more of an exploration.
Mm, and could you tell me a little bit about the making process of these works? Where is the kind of starting point for the images themselves? How do you approach the specific plant material and their arrangement for each shoot and image?
So really, the plants are controlling me because I have to grow the plants, and you know, it's not like I'm a natural gardener or that gardening is something I've done all my life. You know, it's something that this work has really led me to, you know, and because you can't go down to Mitre 10 and buy, you know, some of the plants that I need. Some of them you can buy, but most of them I'm having to grow from seed in my own garden. So that's the first step, I guess, of making the work, is being able to successfully grow the plant.
Mm.
And Waverley Taylor talks about that in her essay, you know, that she used to be a professional gardener, and, you know, plants are unruly beasts, you know, they grow where they want, they do where they want, do what they want, you know, according to a complex set of controls and factors that affect them, you know. So being able to grow the plant in the first instance to make a photograph of it can in itself be incredibly challenging, and in some cases it's taken me like 4 or 5 years to grow the plant.
Wow.
So because I've got to learn about the plant, I've got to find out what conditions it likes, how to keep it alive, you know, it's actually really kind of complicated. So the first aspect is growing the plant. And I used to, when I first started working with plants for the series Jane Says, which is the series that was about plants and the reproductive body, I was buying a lot more plants. You know, I was going to sort of wholesale plant outlets and buying, you know, masses of peonies or whatever it was that I needed to get for an image. But now I'm growing pretty much everything or foraging it.
Yeah, wow. So that photographic process is really starting right at that base level with really nurturing the plant itself.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, that means I have much more interesting plants, you know. The plants that I'm working with now are allowed to be as unruly as they like, you know. They can grow where they want, you know. I just want them to flourish. Whereas the plants that I would purchase from a wholesaler, you know, they've been in an extremely controlled environment, you know, where research has been done to produce, you know, the biggest, brightest flower, etc., etc. So it just means that the plants that I'm photographing are coming out of a wholly different process, you know. They're not in that hyper sort of commercial space. You know, that makes the photographs really different as well. That's quite, you know, and the ones that are in the show at Two Rooms, a lot of them are underwater images. And there's three sort of approaches, or four approaches actually, in the body of work, I'm an Old Phenomenon. And one of those is to produce, is making these works in tanks. So many of those images in the latest exhibition are made in the tank. So I had a tank purposely built, and I'll sort of push all the plants into the tank and then fill it with water and let the plants rot down and evolve in a process with water. And, you know, I'm interested in that because it embodies this idea of a tonic or a tincture that someone might make to be used in a process for the body. And it also embodies the idea of sort of sublimated knowledge or knowledge that's kind of pushed down underwater. And for me, it has a relationship to this history of the figure of the witch where, you know, it was proved or disproved, depending on whether the witch was drowned or whether she floated, as, you know, her guilt was proven or not. So, yeah, I'm interested in water in lots of ways in relation to the figure of the wise woman or the witch.
Yeah, and amongst that photographic process, do you find yourself leaning into this intuition and letting the materials kind of guide the shoot in a way, or is it quite a plan structure going into that shoot?
It's a bit of both. So I'll research the plant and see if there's a sort of aspect of the plant that I want to kind of activate in the image. And so sometimes I might be looking for a particular structure or, for instance, with the two body images that are in the show at Two Rooms at the moment, Scabiosa is associated with death, and one of its names is Widow's Plant, I think. It's got this history, basically, of being associated with the funeral. So it was logical to photograph this plant with a body, you know. So sometimes I'm looking to push forward those sort of relationships to the body, and then sometimes I'm looking to push forward those relationships with water, or, you know, alternative medicine or plant medicine or the green witch, however you want to talk about it. There's lots of different ways.
And I also wanted to touch on photography as a choice of medium, as it's a process that has these deeply entangled histories of classification and imperial systems of ordering in relation to the plant world. How do you feel your practice navigates and kind of shifts this entangled relationship of classification through the photography?
I think that's a really critical question and a really good one. I think there's a really important relationship there between the way that plants use photosynthesis and the way that photography uses light. You know, prior to digital sensors, we had film, which was sensitive to light. And now we have, digital photography still uses light as part of its production of an image. So there's an embodiment there between those two things. There's a relationship between plants and light and photography that's been there right back since someone like Anna Atkins made her cyanotypes of plants, you know, a long, long time ago. So I think, you know, in that sense, photography is an appropriate medium to make those explorations and develop them further.
Yeah, lovely. And I feel like the works themselves, the material, they're not bound in this kind of neat and tidy arrangement. They've got this really liveliness nature to them that really creeps outside of the borders, which I think speaks to what you just said really, really nicely, like it's pushing against those things in a way.
Yeah, well, in many ways the work is a critique of those systems of empire that tried to engage plants in a sort of structured and commercial processes where they're bought and sold, and their value is aesthetic, you know, rather than what they can do, the power that they hold, you know. And my work is about trying to bring back or bring to the fore again the power of plants, and for us to sort of try to renegotiate our relationships with plants, you know. And the titles that I make are selections of folk names that I find for each of the plants, but these names are names that I found across languages and mostly across European contexts, because that's mainly the context that the work is operating in, although there are some plants coming in from other knowledge areas. But they sort of, the titles build, I guess, folk understanding, or they refer to folk understanding of the nature of the plant. But often plants were pre-Linnaeus and pre, you know, the taxonomic systems that were introduced by Hunt. Plants were often named for how they were used, and, you know, whereas Linnaeus was just obsessed with how they looked and how he could categorise them into similar groupings based on that.
Yeah, lovely. And I also wanted to touch on the install of the works themselves. They are presented in this long horizontal line across the gallery wall, creating this embodied passages for viewers to encounter. But it also creates this direct linkage between the works by placing them alongside each other. Can you speak a little bit to this choice of install and how it engages the viewer, but also creates this direct dialogue between the works themselves?
Yeah, I wanted, and then you've got the two bodyworks on the other wall. So I wanted to kind of utilise the space at Two Rooms, which is such a wonderful space, obviously, to kind of, you know, not have a non-linear kind of hang, if you like. You know, normally when you'd go into a gallery, you expect, you know, each wall would have some images on it, and they'd be, you know, loosely, but fairly kind of hung in a way which created a sort of sense of linear progression. And so by breaking the gallery up and just complete, not using two walls at all, having them completely blank, I'm just trying to create a different sort of sensibility. But for me, one of the most important things about the way the images are hung is their height, because they're hung very low so that they sort of interact with the body more. And so you can sort of have a sense of the tummy, you know, where the action of the power of a plant might take place, you know, through in the body, where a plant might be processed and then dispersed in the body in various ways. So yeah, that was an important aspect of the hang for me.
Yeah, and it's really nice. Yeah. And also the scale of them, it also kind of engulfs your body in a way as well. You're kind of really...
It's more immersive. That whole wall of images is immersive in the same way that the tank that the images are in are immersive, because you don't know where the edges of the tank are. You know, I've cropped those out. So there's just a lot of people don't even realise that they're shot underwater. They can't quite work out what's going on with them. And obviously, I mean, the thing I was thinking about too when I was thinking about what I was going to say when I talked to you today is there's a sense of transition by using water. You know, something's flowing into something else. You know, it's not the same thing as producing like a still life in the sort of memento mori sense. You know, there's, you know, one of the images I tipped milk into, for instance, and that's just work is just a moment, but that milk is moving through the water, and it won't ever be the same again. That sense of the way that a transition can be depicted with photography, but then also the way that that relates to natural processes in nature.
Yeah.
And I think the fire image does that as well, because, you know, the flicker of a flame, the image of the vein, you know, that's not ever going to be exactly the same again. The plant and the fire are involved in a process, which is also a process used in nature.
Yeah, beautiful. They really, capture this moment in amongst a lot of momentum rather than a typical still life where the objects are still. You're really kind of capturing this moment that can't be replicated.
Yeah, and I think when I think about it more, that long line of images is really also a kind of a comment from me about the power of these plants, because it's quite powerful to see, you know, 8 images spanning, you know, what, maybe 10 metres or something like that. You know, it's confronting. Yeah, so I think that the way that the sort of unruliness of plants is a really interesting thing. You know, we've become used to buying perfect roses or perfect plants to to be in our houses, but plants are actually unruly beasts, you know, and I think, you know, they wind through each other and they grow where they want, and I think Waverley Taylor has written this beautiful essay about my work, and I'd just like to read the first paragraph of it because it really captures this sensibility. Nasturtium flowers grow along a rock wall at the back of my house. After it rains, their round leaves are covered in beads of water that sit like pearls in green oyster shells, catching and refracting the light. If you gently shake the leaves, each droplet rolls and bounces like a plump, barely set panna cotta. Above the rambling nasturtiums grows an angel's trumpet with flowers that hang like big pink bells. A kaukaua bush stands beneath them, leaning over the pathway so that its waxy leaves brush the bodies that walk past. Over the path looms a magnolia tree, and through its branches spreads a vine with white flowers whose pollen permeates the air.
That was Anne Shelton speaking to me about her current exhibition on At Two Rooms, Old I Am an Old Phenomenon, which is on until the 11th of July, so be sure to go check that one out.
Yes, darling, but is it art?
We've now got a little song for you. This is a new release by Julia Jacklin. I'm really excited. She's got a new album coming out. If you don't already know, I deeply love Julia Jacklin. But this is Get Away From Me. I Think I'll Love You Soon. Enjoy.
This feeling will stay. You look green, like you've been to the islands of men. Thought you'd find what it means, peace of mind. You can't keep womankind in your dreams. You can't keep running away from what is real and what is fake. You can't escape right away from what is real. Thank you.
That's a good art.
Jo Sheehan is a Te Whanganui Atara-based jeweller and stone carver whose practice explores the material language of stone, bringing together contemporary perceptions of the relevance and position of stone as this object or container of memory, viewing stone as not inert but as having this lively material value. In his current solo exhibition at Tim Melville Gallery, Line Drawing, Sheehan presents a new body of work extending his stone carving sculptural practice. Within the works, Sheehan plays with this tension between the hard and soft, letting stone as this firm material hold the shape of these delicate gestures and moments of introspection or underappreciated beauty. Here, a map on the gallery floor is not a geographical navigation tool, but an offering of philosophical guidance, a cartography of memory. Gates to heaven are not an active barrier, but a self-constructed limitation or boundary for a transition to something else, something greater or larger than our present. Inviting viewers into the exhibition, the space feels like this quiet offering of reflection, where fleeting moments are captured in the permanence of stone and images of restraint become entry points of resistance, drawing lines from each work to the viewer and back into the work, letting these conversations emerge. I had a korero with Jo Sheehan about line drawings and his overall practice.
My name's Jo Sheehan. I'm a stone sculptor and jeweller working here in Whanganui Atara, Wellington. And yeah, I have been doing this for a long time now, almost 30 years, and still not sick of it.
Your current exhibition at Tim Melville Line Drawings presents a new body of work extending your sculptural practice with these beautiful carved stone sculptures. I wanted to start this korero about line drawings by speaking a little to this body of work's beginnings. Was there a specific idea or experience that really initiated this body of work's momentum?
I think for this group of work, and I mean kind of yes and no, maybe no, as I was sort of beginning, you know, to sort of make the work. But upon reflection, I look back and I see that it was linked to earlier works and clearly a kind of a part of an interest I have in the way in which our world is delineated and the boundaries within which we live and, you know, that are made for us and that we make for ourselves. And so, yeah, I mean, I just sort of began, I think I probably began with one work and then, you know, sort of range around. I think there was probably 13 or 14 things that I started and then they kind of just start, you know, the winners emerge, or maybe not winners, but the ones that seem to sort of talk to each other better emerge, and then I sort of chase them down and see where I end up.
Your practice is obviously incredibly materially driven, grounded in this exploration of carving stone. If I can take you back to when you first approached working with this material, what kind of first drew you to stone specifically and its material language?
I think as I get older, I look back and I think about this quite a lot because I have been doing it for so long. But really, you know, the more I go along, the more I realize I almost had no choice. It was so much a part of my family history, as well as a kind of natural affinity or a natural sensibility towards stone as a art making material. Like before that, you know, my father, or probably my grandfather's the beginning point. He was a geologist and just generally a lover of nature, but one of those kind of amazing kind of paradoxes where he was also, you know, involved in mining. Yeah, so he had in his cabinet, you know, at his house growing up, this incredible display of geological samples from different places he'd traveled around the world and mineral samples from different kind of mines that he'd worked on. And it was a source of just great, you know, huge fascination for me. And that was our bonding, mine and Owen's bonding, was through, you know, peering through a loop at these universes, you know, these worlds. And he would talk to me about the stones. And from quite early, I had this sort of sense of deep time from him and this kind of idea of stone not being inert, but quite lively. If you're spanning a longer period of time, and just endlessly fascinating. So there was that. But then, and my dad was a stone carver. He came out to New Zealand from the United States in 1971 and sort of was a part of the hippie movement, living in Nelson and Christchurch and was making jewellery with Jens Hansen, and then started carving stone, started carving Pounamu. So I would spend time in his workshop as well as a kid. I mean, I was probably carving from, he was working all the time, so I just, when I, in the holidays when I'd see him, I'd just go to the workshop and make pieces from about 10 years old, you know, I'd be sort of working away, beavering away in there. So I had this like extraordinary early exposure to quite extraordinary material and kind of, you know, really amazing ways of thinking about this material. And so it was on my radar. But also, interestingly, my daughter Lucy just recently sleuthed out, she's a gun researcher, sleuthed out our ancestor Owen, who travelled from Ireland to New York, and he was a stonemason, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, right the way through, you know. And then I was also very lucky and privileged that my parents were good friends with Warwick Freeman, and so I was able to spend time in his studio and have access to him as an example of how to think about material and how to think about one's position in relation to the material and landscape and all sorts of things from quite young when I was at high school. And yeah, and so I thought I would like to do something here, and that set me off really. I was away.
That's so beautiful to kind of hear about how that material has just kind of stuck with you and been connected with you your entire life. And I guess like it almost kind of chose you in a way, maybe.
it often feels like that.
Yeah, it was given to you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are, I don't think I'm the only one who goes on holiday and fills the footwells of the car with stone, but it is a thing, you know, everywhere I go, and you sort of become like it's kind of an obsession as well as a this kind of constant curiosity to see what the land has produced, and then you know, the kind of constellatory nature of relationship, cultural, geological, personal, that is laid, historical, that's laid over this, is, you know, like, so that's the thing for me that was just so impactful early on, was understanding that there was just, you know, these individual, very beautiful stones or raw materials were actually kind of like nodes for, you know, all sorts of intersecting realities and experiences and histories, and that was very cool. So very lively and very dynamic, you know, to my mind. Yeah, you work with all of that. You know, that's the idea, I think. You know, it's not just sort of like, it's never been for me a sense of, you know, some kind of empty material that I'm applying myself to with no consideration. It's sort of like the wrangling that occurs with all of that stuff in the best case.
Yeah, totally. It's got like such a rich physical history, and I guess with that, like, it really transfers into the material language of it, the ability to kind of hold on to so much information and, like, I guess a past life before it, you know, turns into an artwork. I guess with that, does that geographical context in which the stone has come from inform much of how a work will take shape into its final form in your practice?
Sometimes very directly, and other times, you know, in more subtle ways. I mean, there is a work in the show, line drawing, which is a map, but it's sort of, you know, it's more a kind of cartography of memory and experience and relationship than a map of specific place. And so, you know, that stone was gifted to me by Anne Robinson, who was the partner of John Edgar, who was a kind of mentor of mine. He passed away a couple of years ago, and we helped her kind of deal with another dragon level stone hoard that he had. And I was gifted this extraordinary sort of flat piece of basalt from the Hunua Ranges, and I was also gifted his topo maps, his topographical maps, the collection of maps that he had used to sort of navigate his way around, you know, Aotearoa, during his career looking for stone, and just sort of not so much looking for stone, I think, as much, you know, understanding the landscape from which he was working. And I just was like, oh my God, you know, sometimes you're given the elements to make the work. And I just thought about all of the walks that I had done with all of the people that I love and that have influenced me and that have inspired me. And that sort of went into this work. And those, you know, sort of these lines were drawn, they were dotted on that stone to sort of reference the map, I suppose. But in a broader sense, you know, it's really interesting to think about the way in which we relate to landscape in terms of, you know, path making, pathways. And yeah, that was kind of curious to me and interesting to me as well. You know, once a path has been drawn, once a path has been made and a line has been drawn, it's sort of a dividing, and that's interesting to think about. So yeah, all that stuff goes into the work. I'm thinking about it constantly as I'm sort of scratching away there and drilling and trying not to go crazy in the work.
Yeah, beautiful. I guess that leads on quite nicely the way you were talking about the work line drawing. I was kind of thinking about the works in the show, and I feel like there's this quite beautiful contrast of, I guess, stone as this hard material, then kind of holding the shape of these delicate or softer gestures, ripples of raindrops, a map kind of as a wayfinding offering, and gates to heaven, which feel less as an act of barrier but more as maybe a self-constructed limitation or boundary for a transition to something else. Does that kind of tension between softer concepts and hard material play quite a strong role in the development of or consideration behind a work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love this game of you know, light and heavy, and light in terms of the way in which light works with stone as well. I mean, I've carved Pananamu a lot, and I'm obsessed with the way the light enters the stone as a huge part of the work. You know, like it's just massive kind of consideration. And it's the same with the harder, darker stones, the way in which the light reflects or refracts off the surface is hugely important. It becomes a kind of dynamic aspect, or a really important way for the work to tell its story. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, sometimes it's sort of softer gestures and harder concepts too. I mean, I love what you said about the gates of heaven, you know, sort of representing a transition. And that's a huge part of what I was kind of thinking about, and I intentionally chose pieces of stone that were offcuts or found, kind of like, you know, I think I talk about it in terms of stone rescue. You know, sometimes cladding gets ripped off a building and then, you know, ends up somewhere, and I'll pick it up and take it home and then try to use it, thinking about the fact that it's come from, in the case of the Gates of Heaven one, which came from Carrara in Italy, you know, this massive journey for the stone that has been used traditionally for a long time to depict, you know, the realm of the gods, basically, you know. Yeah, and so, you know, I made this work, but I chose the stone because it had this kind of cloud in the background. I really wanted to kind of give a sense of a foreground, the surface carved, but then revealing this internal or distance. You know, when you look at it, it looks like there's something in the distance, something elusive that's hard to kind of catch. And yeah, this sort of sense of traveling through, but also the fact is that that ubiquitous mesh fence that exists all around us, which is see-through and seems kind of benign, is actually very effective at keeping us apart or keeping us divided. So I was curious about that as well. But then when I was carving it, the thing that I liked about it, and this was the bonus for me, the thing that I experienced when I was actually carving it, the Carrara marble in particular was a new challenge for me, because it just doesn't, it's very soft. It doesn't behave like the way hard stone behaves when I carve it with sort of like a diamond tip drill. Mm. I had to carve it with chisels, like literally hand carve it. And it's this very slow micro movement, very, very definite and slow process, very meditative actually. And every time I carved the wires interlocking like that or overlapping like that, they became like, they just looked like small arms linked together. And so I just had this lovely kind of shift from this idea of restraint becoming something like solidarity and resistance. You know, like it was a nice kind of thing to experience as I was shaping it. Yeah, and then the other one is made from black marble from Takaka. And we have this, I think you can buy that stone from Fulton Hogan Road Metal Quarry for $36 a ton. It's the most extraordinarily beautiful carving material. And we have this tendency to find these pockets of wonder and then set up a road metal crushing, dynamiting quarry. And I'm always just like, it's so hard to get to deal with. I'm just like, what are we doing? This is too nuts. But yeah, I love that little piece. It had this kind of smoky cloud in the background.
It's so wonderful to hear, I guess, a little bit more about the conceptual underpinnings of some of the works and I guess a little bit more about your process, particularly working with some of those different materials. I guess like seeing the show as a whole with all of these different kind of images that come out within the works and these ideas, the kind of tracing of lines between each work. Is there kind of an intention for how these works relate to one another or present an offering that you wish to communicate to viewers engaging with the show?
I think I wanted to create a show. Like my intention with this body of work was less to sort of, you know, tell a story as much as it was to create a kind of place of, you know, quite quiet show that and kind of like very definite little points, but that those points, once sort of investigated, kind of unpack some a range of different kind of entry points for each work, and that there would be this kind of dance. You know, I didn't really know how it was going to fit together as I was making it. Like I said, there are three or four pieces on the studio floor here that didn't kind of fit. And this group emerged, and it just started started chattering to me, you know, as I was making them. And I thought, okay, that really they kind of work well together. And yeah, I suppose, you know, what I hope is that, you know, people, you know, you're kind of almost forced to, when there's less work in the room and you have to travel between the works, you're sort of forced to spend some time with them and just sort of consider what this thing is doing and how it's sort of operating on you. Yeah, and I think, you know, what emerged for me was that thing about making space, the way in which we make sort of space in our world and how we are held by the kind of conceptual boundaries and real boundaries in our lives. That was something, I mean, that was for me, that was what was going on when I was sort of looking at making those shapes and forms. And then, you know, even something like the Quiet Rain, the works that are about water, I mean, it was kind of an attempt at sort of that futile thing of trying to capture a moment so fleeting. And as I was attempting to carve these water drops on this slab of basalt, another piece which came from Joe Dentke, and the moment that I was trying to capture was walking around the Countdown car park on the way to Countdown with my friend Paul at, I don't know, 11 o'clock in the morning, and it was just started raining, and it was so beautiful. And here I was out there in the car park taking photos of the rain with the trolley guy saying to Paul, what's he doing? And Paul says, it's beautiful, look. And he just looked at me like, looked at us like we were mad, you know, but I'm interested in the way, you know, like with stone in particular and water, that relationship is always really interesting to me. It's great. You know, it holds so much evidence of this epic shaping force. So, you know, the futility of trying to capture a moment in stone was one thing. But then when I started carving it, it just took me to the, you know, there are these kind of, they're called scour holes. You find them, you know, in nature and in the landscape where drips of water have hit, you know, for decades, one particular place. And they carve these holes, these kind of circular indentations in the stone. So, you know, that was nice too. I just thought, wow, you know, it's a beautiful thing. You know, we have these moments which we are fleeting, but we don't have a real sense of how impactful they are in our lives over time, you know. And so that sort of became a part of that work And then the smaller one was sort of like a distance thing. I don't know. I have all of you have these fanciful notions and you're stuck in a workshop for months sort of working away. But it seemed to all fit together quite beautifully for me. But you never really know. That's the other part. You know, like I have the transition and the shift from the studio, from the workshop, very industrial, to the gallery, which was so clean and contained, is always a surprise. And in this case, it just worked quite beautifully. And Tim's got such a fantastic eye for placement and making these kind of conversations that it was a beautiful process.
That was artist Joe Sheehan speaking with me about his current solo exhibition, Line Drawing, on at Tim Melville Gallery. That's on until the 27th of June, so check it out.
Only positive critiques. Honest.
Various artists.
We'll be right back to give you your arts guide for the week. This is Fishman's Backview.
It's the 95 BFM Art Guide on various artists.
It's paintings in that.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tamaki Makaurau, as mentioned on the show, Anne Shelton's I Am an Old Phenomenon is on at Two Rooms until the 11th of July.
As also mentioned on the show, Jo Sheehan's solo exhibition Line Drawing is on at Tim Melville Gallery until the 27th of June.
Lucy Mail's solo exhibition Phone Tree is on in the Changing Room at Gus Fisher Gallery until the 22nd of August. Also on at Gus Fisher Gallery is Studies for a Keepsake, an exhibition show and Claude Cahoon and Marcel Moore, also on until the 22nd of August.
Emma Fitt's solo exhibition Emerald Pools is on at Melanie Roger Gallery until the 27th of June.
Grace has two new exhibitions, Desktop by Elijah Borton and The Day by Sophia Laurie. Both are on until the 18th of July.
Two exhibitions are on at the Arts House Trust at Parr Homestead. Retail, a group exhibition of contemporary object makers working across ceramics, jewellery, installation and design, as well as a new solo exhibition by Nova Paul Pua Wananga.
Hannah Ireland's solo exhibition Making Faces is on at Puku Room until the 4th of July.
Room has two exhibitions, Day for Night by Finn Godbolt and Mitchell McGrath, and Gregarious Bloom by Dronico Hawthorne. Both are on until the 18th of July. Also, Nico Hinden and Nami Napu Meimuru White's Cosmologies is on at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery until the 9th of August.
The Blue Dome by Selena Ushadi is on at Artspace Aotearoa until the 4th of July. If you have something you want on the Arts Guide, you can email us at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi ki a koutou katoa e koro mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
That's all for various artists for today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us today.
Jo Sheehan.
And Anne Shelton.
Nei rā, hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95bfm.com or check out our Instagram at 95bfm various artists for more.
Ka hoki mai mātoa, te rā wiki. Next up is the Land of the Good Groove with Murray. My name is Soph.
I'm Maya.
And that was various artists.
We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to 95BFM. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.